Campaign of 1806 and 1807. In the year 1806, I was drafted with many of my comrades into military service in the conscription of that time, and was assigned to the regiment of Romig, which afterward was given the name of Franquemont, and of No. 4, and which was in the Ludwigsburg garrison. In the fall I travelled with the regiment to Prussia, in the campaign which Emperor Napoleon, with the princes, then his allies, was conducting at that time against Prussia. In the fall we marched through Ellwangen, Nuremberg, Ansbach, Bayreuth, Plauen, Dresden in Saxony, then through Bunzlau into Großglogau in Silesia, where we remained in garrison for about 3 weeks. During a period from the month of January to the month of March, I had to go with half of the regiment to accompany several convoys of captured Prussians from Glogau back through Crossen, Frankfurt on the Oder, and Dresden, where we were relieved. We were given good quarters everywhere, which kept me always healthy and cheerful, in spite of the continuous marching. Furthermore, I was only 19 years old, a fact which caused me frequently to participate in thoughtless and dangerous enterprises. During our return to Glogau, the convoy, together with a Bavarian corps, was surrounded by Prussians in Bunzlau. We then closed all the gates and caught the spies. In this city it happened in my quarter that a comrade wanted to force the landlord to sing. However, he refused to do so, sitting the whole night on a bench near the stove, weeping. Since this man couldn't sing because of his sorrow, Soldier Hummel wanted to frighten him, took his rifle, cocked the hammer and shot. The bullet passed by me and another soldier and lodged in the wall. I wanted to mention this in order to show how the soldiers were running wild at that time. A spy who was a village smith was brought before the guardhouse. He had letters and orders to tell the Prussians of our strength in manpower. He was laid on a bench and whipped by two or three corporals. Two men had to hold his feet and two his head. His leather breeches were stretched out and water poured on them, and then he received about 150 blows. At last he could no longer speak because he was half dead. At every blow the lieutenant said to the smith, "This is a Bavarian Taler, this is a Württemberg Taler," at which the lieutenant was really able to laugh. After this experience, the smith was taken to the threshing floor and shot. Blows with clubs also were heaped upon many innocent people in this city. When the Prussians, who were laying siege to the city, lost their courage, they withdrew and we entered Glogau again. After I'd been in Glogau one day, I had to escort, with a part of the regiment, 19 money wagons to the Grand Army. These money wagons were drawn by 4 and 6 horses, and many sank into the mire every day. This march went through Breslau, and then across the Polish border to Kalisz, Posen, Gniezen, Inowrocław, and Torn on the Vistula River, where the convoy was given over. From there we had to return to Gniezen, a sizable city in Poland. There we had a storeroom to guard, watching in a room at a bright fire. In this house there was a Polish soldier's wife, who taught me as much Polish as I would need. We suffered from the cold a great deal there during the 2 weeks of our stay, because our feet got no warmth and a severely cold winter prevailed. Finally, 8 men, including myself, were sent into the outlying villages by the commandant of the city. I received several written orders to requisition food supplies, yet even though I didn't know the roads, I was not furnished with a guide. Since I had to carry out my commission, I went, as did my other comrades, into the Jewish section, where everyone spoke German, but few could read or write it, and few, as I found out, could read Polish. There I wanted to take the first Jew I came across as a guide, but the first escaped, and likewise the others I chased. Finally I ran after one and chased him into the attic of his house and caught him among many women and children. Here he wanted to defend himself, and I had to use force. I took him, dragged him down the two flights of stairs, and had to hold him by the coat and kick him forward for 2 hours, threatening him if he should fail to lead me to the right village. Here I had to walk through a lake, and the water went over my knees. I commanded the Jew to lead the way, and he howled so loudly for fear of drowning that I had to laugh and send him back immediately. After crossing, the Jew sat down and shook out his water-filled boots. After I arrived in the village ahead of me, the nobleman quartered me in the mayor's house. But when I entered the room through a straw door, I could not stand upright and could not see any people for the smoke. This compelled me to quarter myself at the nobleman's house. The next day, I tried to visit 8 villages, but I frequently got to only 1 or 2 in a day, for often it was necessary to walk a distance of 3 or 4 miles. In one manner, I once could get no guide, since everyone ran away and hid from my lone self. A big dog also kept attacking me, and I shot the dog because of my customary youthful impulses. This was another reason why I got no guide. Here I travelled alone, depending upon my own good judgment, to a village in another region, and received here, as almost everywhere, unrequested presents, which pleased me very much. Since, as I said, it required 8 days instead of 4 to visit the villages, and since the convoy lying in Gneisen left hurriedly, I and 3 other men returned too late. The convoy was gone. Having obtained the route of march from Gneisen to the nicer stronghold in Silesia, we had to march alone a distance of about 100 hours. Since we 4 men thought we were well off, we did not hurry to catch the convoy, but contented ourselves with comfortable travelling. We visited the noblemen, who usually had to hitch up their own good horses for us, while we threatened that we had to catch the convoy by the next day, and that the noblemen could be made responsible if we missed it. However, we usually had to combine force with these methods to get horses. Once we took 4 horses from a nobleman, and unfortunately the march led us through a large government city, Posen. Here the servant said something we couldn't understand to a few burghers, but we were not stopped. We wanted to drink some brandy in the last suburb, and we halted. At once the nobleman came up on a white horse, being a Polish general stationed there in garrison. Our position didn't seem to be the best, and we had to discuss what was to be done. Quickly, our sickest-looking comrade had to lie on the ground and continually moan and lament. The general greeted us by threatening to write to our headquarters in Silesia about such use of his horses. That might have happened if the sick man had not aroused some serious doubt on the part of the general. To defend ourselves further, we said we had just as much right to complain to our regiment that His Excellency the General had hindered our progress and had caused the death of a sick man. At these words, a wagon with 2 horses was brought there at once, and we were able to travel away laughing with our healthy sick man. After Posen, we came into a little Polish town called Fraustadt, which was a garrison town. I have to mention this town because of its windmills, which numbered 99. From Fraustadt we came after several marches to Glogau on Easter Eve, and were quartered with a Jew. Since we were acquainted in this city, we wanted to give this Jew something to remember us by. The meals were usually attended by violence on account of stinginess and uncleanliness, and since clean chinaware was always set up for the Jews, we took over all that chinaware and ate with it, causing such an uproar in the house that a crowd of people gathered in front of the house to listen. Our defence was that we just hadn't thought of making anything unkosher that had been intended not to be for us, and so the Jews could not set forth any complaint. From Glogau we travelled with some of the Black Riflemen toward the stronghold of Schreidnitz. We hadn't obtained a wagon out of Glogau, which seemed to us a great hardship. It was Easter Day, March the 29th, and we looked for horses in every stable in a village called Hochkirch, but found none, which failure made it necessary for us to look even in the parsonage. When we searched the buildings and found nothing but an old woman there, we wanted to look into the church where the service was in progress, and we found the church full of people. Meanwhile, there stood in the court a beautiful carriage hitched with two horses. So we untied the horses and rode away without a servant. Since we had to hurry to escape the church folk, I had to drive, and ran into a tree stump so that the carriage and all of us lay there in the mud. Here we set out again and travelled until we were half a mile from Schweidnitz. In that place there was a tavern in the forest. And after we'd sold the carriage and horses cheaply to the innkeeper, we continued our march. When we came to the fortress of Neisse, we had to go on with our regiment and with the 2nd Regiment through Breslau, across Poland through the city of Kalisz, then Posen, Gniezin, Inoroslav, and Torn on the Vistula River. From there we went through Prussian Pomerania toward the fortress of Kolberg on the Baltic Sea. 1 mile from this stronghold is a town called Belgard, and there was a castle there which had belonged to our King Frederick while he had encamped in this town as general of the cavalry. On this journey from Torn to Kolberg, I saw a lake which lay in a forest by a monastery. In this lake were multitudes of frogs, which were of a very beautiful bright blue colour, and no soldier would quit until he had caught one of these beautiful frogs. Beyond this region we came to a little town in which the largest part of the inhabitants were Jews. The same day we had had to walk several miles through swamps and snow water up to our knees, and when quarters were taken there for the evening, I and 4 other men came into a Jew's house. The room was full of straw and goats. Since neither fire nor wood was to be had, we went into the next house to lodge, looked for the Jew, and took him into custody. For only by applying such stern treatment could we induce the wife to bring us food on her husband's account. While we were besieging the fortress of Kolberg, we were assigned a camp in a swampy place. Since wood and even straw were rarely to be had, the barracks were built from earth and sod, and ditches were dug around them. As some sickness was arising because of the continual fog, I also became sick and had to go to the hospital in the fortress of Stettin, which is also a fortress on the sea. When I arrived with several from the regiment, we were placed 3 stories high under the roof in the hospital. Here, 12 to 15 of the men about me died every day, which made me sick at my stomach and would have caused my death in the end if I and 4 comrades had not reported ourselves as being well even on the 2nd day and escaped. This hospital and 3 others, according to rumour, had 6,000 sick people. And that was the reason also why everyone with an appetite had to suffer great hunger, which was one of the things that moved me to leave. The 3rd day we 5 men were allowed to go, and we travelled without delay to our regiment. In this fortress of Stettin, the Würzburg soldiers were stationed, and were all dressed in uniforms of white and red, that is, like Austrian soldiers. This stronghold had a position which could be besieged only by land from the side facing Berlin. Here the Oder River flows into the Baltic Sea. This, together with the swamps which extend for a mile, and through which currents of the Oder flow, surrounds 2/3 of the city. Over the swamp is a paved dike a mile long, reaching to the head of the bridge near a village named Dam. This city is large and beautiful, and had especially large merchant ships in the harbour to look at. When we five men came again without delay to the fortress of Kolberg, we had the honour of enduring the siege in good health for another 3 weeks. Pentecost night is especially fixed in my memory, since the fortress was stormed then. When we had to leave camp after midnight, all the regiments marched forward through the swamp, and finally, when light firing began upon the outposts, we were commanded to attack by wading through the rampart ditches with fascines, to tread these in, and to scramble up the outworks by chopping and shovelling. When I stood in the ditch, each first soldier had to pull up the next one with his rifle. The ramparts were of sand, and everyone frequently fell back again because of the attack of the enemy or just because of the sliding sand. Yet in that place the huge cannonballs flew by above us, thundering so violently that we would have believed the earth would burst to pieces. When everyone was almost on top of the earthwork, the Prussians were slaughtered with great vigour, and the rest took flight into the gate. Then we, too, wanted to gain possession of the gateway in order to enter the city. But at this critical time, many of these Prussians were shot, along with our men, by small and large guns, and the gate was closed. Since all sorts of shells and rockets broke out of the fortress like a cloudburst, we had to take to flight. Those who meanwhile were scrambling up the outworks had to jump from the fortress into the moat along with their prisoners, and all the rest had to do likewise. During this retreat, many fell on bayonets, many drowned, and many of us were also brought into the fortress as prisoners and sent away to Danzig by sea. When we reached camp, we saw many who had lost their helmet, rifle, sabre, knapsack, etc. Because of various falls and pains, many looked for wounds and had none. Many, however, did not become aware of the wounds which they had until they reached camp. In this camp there were Poles, Westphalians, French, and, as mentioned before, only two regiments of us from Württemberg. One morning the Prussians surprised the Polish camp from the sea with their ships, as had happened before on Easter. The cannon fire on the Poles was so heavy that they could not withdraw fast enough. Their cannonballs also travelled more than half again as far toward our camp as our balls did across the water, since the surrounding swamps were frozen, and the balls could roll along on the ice so fast that one ball often took off the feet and legs of 10 or 12 men, frequently both feet of the same man. During this blockade, the Prussians frequently made attacks, although every time with great losses. At the end of over 4 weeks, the command came from General Vendôme, or rather from Prince Jerome, that both regiments from Württemberg should go by forced march to Silesia to the siege of Silberberg. When we marched away, we had to get additional horses in the little town of Bellegarde to carry the knapsacks, etc. This brought me to misfortune, since my knapsack, cloak, bayonet, and the money which I'd packed in a belt of my cloak were lost. When I was in my quarters and learned this, I wanted a horse to ride to the other companies in order to look for my lost articles, but I had to make use of a military requisition and look for a horse with my landlord in the forest, since I saw that there was horse manure in the stable. When I had the horse, but no saddle or bridle, I made a bridle out of a bit of rope and travelled about 3 miles in the surrounding villages, but found nothing. At best, I only got lost and didn't know how to ask where I wanted to go, since, because of the dialect there, I couldn't remember the name of the village, and I believed that I could depend on what I had remembered of the roads. Finally, it grew dark, and with no other choice I had to let the horse go where it wished, and that proved the best choice. The horse walked half the night through heath and woods, and since I didn't let it graze from the ground, it went home to its village, and I had to be resigned to my loss. From this village, the march went through Pomerania and Poland to Breslau. From Kalisz on, we obtained wagons, and were all driven in them to the camp near Frankenstein and Reichenbach. We arrived there in the month of June. Before the fortress of Silberberg, all the regiments from Württemberg and also Bavarian soldiers had laid siege. This stronghold could not be stormed because of its height and wouldn't surrender. The ground plan of this fortress could be examined by many of our men who were captured, but only after the war. During the war, they were not allowed even to see the way they had to go. After 2 weeks had passed, a few regiments remained before this fortress, and the others, in which I belonged, had to begin the siege at Glatz. When the blockade of this stronghold was begun, the Württemberg troops took up their camp in a rye field just blooming, and the straw was of the right length to serve for the barracks, which was a great advantage in camping. When I arrived in this field, I hastened to look for my brother, who was in the Lilienberg regiment. Here we met, embraced, and greeted one another, and joy filled our hearts. Then he took me to his barracks and gave me trousers, shirts, and several other pieces of clothing which I needed, since, as I have already said, I had lost almost everything at Kolberg. Then, when the stronghold of Glatz was surrounded by blockade, several surprise attacks were undertaken against us, which always ended, nevertheless, in a loss to the Prussians. After 2 weeks had passed, we undertook against the town and the fortress an attack which started from each camp at about 1 o'clock at night. Everyone had to be careful to prevent any noise from the rifles and cannon, and we moved in columns through the grain fields toward the outposts. The men were already wet through up to their necks from the dew on the grain. Then the outposts began to fire, the command to storm was given, and everyone had to go through a river, at times up to his arms in water. A breastwork facing us was mounted, and under a rain of large and small bullets, the Prussians, along with their women and children, were stabbed and shot to death, and some were hurled alive, together with their horses and cannon, over the sides of the walls. Then the Lilienberg regiment pressed upon the city gates, an attempt which, in spite of great losses, was of no avail, however. While the enemy had to defend themselves around and in the crowded part of the city, a terrible shelling of light and heavy artillery broke in upon us, and all of us had to abandon the positions we'd taken. Large mines were exploded in the breastwork, and everywhere there flew rockets, so-called pitch rings, which could be put out only with small boxes as they fell on the ground. So everyone returned to the camp in the finest disorder, and at daybreak everyone began looking up his friends. With fear-pressed heart I searched for my brother, and as he was also looking for me, we found each other unharmed. Anyone who understands brotherly love can certainly imagine our joy at this moment. When this attack was over, it was said that we would attack again the next night if the fortress didn't surrender. This attack was not made, however, because of the announcement of peace. If anyone would or could be an onlooker at frightful explosions, he could get the finest view at a fortress attack, which is a more remarkable sight by far than a battle on the field. The bombs and grenades criss-crossing in the air in such great numbers, all floating like balls of fire in the air, and exploding or bursting in the air or on the ground with a small cannon report, the slow ascent of each shell, the fast descent often also a collision of them in the air, all this is a sight of moving beauty. It is different with the rockets, which fly invisibly by with a small whisper. The grenades, however, and more so the bombs, behave like vultures in the air which race past the ear with storming wings. We remained a few days longer in the camp, then came to a permanent camp in the region near Reichenbach, and were finally stationed every 2 weeks in another region. On St. Jacob's Day, all the Württembergers had to leave Silesia, go by way of Frankfurt on the Oder, and take up permanent camp in the Brandenburg district, especially the region around Berlin near Stargard, Fürstenwalde, Bieskau, etc. Here we stayed for 11 weeks among these poor peasants, who, because of the infertility of the region, had no provisions except potatoes, beans, and mutton. In speaking often of the good food which they had to give us, they hinted that they believed we must come from good countries, since we, having the best of food, didn't show any appreciation of it, and because of our appetite had butchered all their sheep. For one who wishes to discuss the poverty and its causes, my observations are set forth in the following manner. First, these people still owe their noblemen too much service in that the baron demands a quarter-share cottager's hired hand or son to work for him for 4, 5, or 6 days weekly without wages. Likewise, he takes a daughter for 6 years without paying her wages, just as the reigning prince takes the son for his army. A half or full share cottager has to serve more in proportion to the size of his property. So there are still villages where a man with his wife and children must work from 3 to 5 days for the nobleman, the 4th, 5th, or only the 6th day remaining for him to work for himself. However, he gets as much land from the baron for himself as he wants or is able to till. Second, the soil is only light sand, so that when sown, the tilled patches must even be beaten with a lath, and to prevent the blowing away of sand and seed, must be pressed down firmly. Naturally, therefore, only oats, potatoes, or undern, and rye, seldom any wheat, can be grown. Third, there is a lack of culture, especially of physical training, of willingness to work, of understanding and religion. Seldom does anyone go to church, only old grandmothers and old men, so that often, as I saw myself, the preacher would read his Sunday sermon for 8 or 10 persons with a similar lack of ardour. I learned also from my landlord, who had a boy of 11 or 12 years of age, that this boy could not read or write and didn't know religious teachings. A book lying there gave me occasion to find this out. As I was reading, I happened to run across the Ten Commandments. I asked whether the Ten Commandments were taught to the children in the schools. The landlord said, yes, they are supposed to be taught, but my son doesn't know them yet, nor can he read or write. I must demand, however, that he still be taught it. Since, therefore, these people are little educated even in their own religion, unchristian and heretical books serve to make them hate other denominations. And such people are weak enough to believe fables of this kind. I became convinced of this as I read in such a book and afterwards spoke of it to the landlord. Therefore, I played the part of a gravedigger, bound a stone to this book, and sank it in the big lake. After I'd been in this village for 3 months, the entire corps journeyed home. The march went through Plauen, Nuremberg, Bayreuth, Ansbach, and Dinkelsbühl into Elvangen. The king awaited us, and then reviewed us there on the Schlossfeld. It was extraordinarily cold on this day, although we didn't consider this unusual, since we were accustomed to cold. Before we came to Elvangen, my company passed the night in the little town of Wailtingen, which is old Württembergian. There everyone was supposed to give shouts of joy at crossing the border, but this was followed by a good deal of swearing because of the bad quarters we were given there. This campaign was now ended, and my two sisters and friends visited us two brothers. The reunion was a joy which couldn't have been greater evidence of family love.